Welcome to Voicing Startups, where I, Colin Bournes, interview founders and operators changing the world through audio, voice, and conversational technology. This week on the Voicing Startups podcast, I am talking with Ian Fried, co-founder and CEO of Bamboo Learning. Bamboo Learning is the leader in interactive voice-powered education, and they have recently closed a $1.4 million seed round. Also, I've been super excited to interview Ian, given that he is a 12-year Amazon veteran with really interesting experiences. Here's a bit of his bio. At Amazon, Ian was a vice president, and he served as technology advisor to Amazon founder and CEO Jeff Bezos from 2004 to 2005. He led the Amazon Kindle business, including business strategy, product development, business development, and marketing from 2006 until 2010. Additionally, Ian led the Amazon Echo Alexa business from inception in 2011 through its first product release in 2015. From 2016 to 2017, Ian led consumer services, including Amazon restaurants, a one-hour food delivery service from local restaurants in 25 cities. I really hope you enjoy this week's episode of Voicing Startups. Hey, Ian, thank you for coming on the Voicing Startups podcast.
Thanks so much, Colin. It's great that you invited me on the podcast. I'm really looking forward to chatting.
Great. So to start things off, I want to touch first on some of the business pieces to Bamboo Learning, and then use the bulk of this interview to really dig into the product and your most recent round of financing and learn about what you guys are doing going forward with that. So just to start things out, can we get a quick background of yourself?
Sure. Well, I've actually been in the digital business, including devices, software, and content for almost 30 years. My most recent role prior to founding Bamboo Learning about a year and a half ago is I spent 12 years at Amazon as a vice president. Most of that time was leading various device businesses for Amazon, including actually Echo and Alexa from the very beginning. So I literally was in the room with Jeff Bezos showing a demo on another product. And I think it inspired him to start thinking about Echo and Alexa. So that was as vice president of Echo and Alexa. I also led the Kindle business from the very beginning and came up with the idea for Fire TV within my team, and also led Fire Phone. So I had some successes and one that didn't go quite as well.
Mm-hmm. That's great. It sounds pretty exciting to especially be around someone like Jeff Bezos. But what exactly is Bamboo Learning and the key value proposition of the business?
Absolutely. So Bamboo Learning is a startup I co-founded with Arena Fine about 18 months ago. And our vision is to be the leader in voice-powered education. And we imagine a world where, a few years from now, anyone, anywhere on the planet can learn anything that they'd like to using our products and really do that in any language. So that might be something as straightforward as math, like addition, subtraction, multiplication, or higher math like calculus. But it could also be something like, what are the basics of a car engine? How can you learn about how a car engine works? So we're starting much more focused on initially K through 12 education, but there's nothing preventing us from broadening quite broadly, actually, to anyone, as I said, anywhere on the planet.
Awesome. Sounds super cool. How did you come up with that idea, or what's really the origin story of Bamboo Learning?
Well, I would say it's two or three things coming together. First of all, I did, as I mentioned, head the Echo and Alexa business from the very beginning. And when we were envisioning the product of Echo and the service Alexa, the idea was that it would be a very broad-based computing platform that you should be able to do anything with. And both when I was at Amazon and also having left a couple years ago, I noticed that a lot of the applications, Amazon calls them Alexa skills, they were pretty simple and pretty much an in and an out type thing. So even some that, that Amazon has done, like add this to my to-do list, or what's the weather, or play this song. And I've been in the industry long enough to remember what it was like before Microsoft Windows. And I've seen everything from Windows and the Mac to the internet and mobile become an incredibly broad-based platform that incredibly rich applications were built on top of. So I felt like that was actually missing from much of the voice ecosystem, whether that's Alexa or Google Assistant or some of the other smaller ones. And our vision was to build much richer applications where consumers would interact multiple times. They'd take a quiz, or they'd hear a story and then listen to questions or answer questions about the story. So our session times for most of our experiences are quite a bit longer, often going 10, 20, even up to 40 minutes per sitting or per session. And so part of it was build something incredibly rich on this new platform. So that's one. Another one was I have been really interested in how computing and perhaps more broadly technology can dramatically change, particularly a young person's life. And I've done some things both pre and post Amazon to help, whether it's schools or nonprofits involved in education. So it's been kind of near and dear to my heart off and on throughout my whole career. And I also have known my co-founder, Arena Fine, for almost 30 years. And Arena's entire career, as much as I've been in technology, she's spent her entire career in education. Mm-hmm. So when I was thinking about this broader-based computing platform around voice applications, I really felt like doing something in and around education to help kids initially learn, but also enable lifelong learning, that I could get this great partner involved, Arena, and we'd worked really well together. And so the idea was to create education applications on this brand new platform. And part of it was just that, you know, kids absolutely love Alexa. And a lot of what they were doing is, like I said before, these sort of one-turn interactions. Tell me a joke, play this song. And I think they were probably getting a little bit bored with that type of interaction. And parents definitely were thinking like, okay, it's great, my kid is interested in Alexa, but like, is there a little bit more to it than just telling or listening to Alexa tell jokes? So I would say it's kind of those two things coming together. And I guess one other that's a little bit personal. I think I'm in my field entirely because when I was in eighth or ninth grade, two very early personal computers showed up. They were Commodore PETs. They were they existed before the Apple II computer did. They were way before the Commodore 64. And the fact that they showed up at a point in my life where I was just interested in something new, and they were there, and I could experiment and play and learn almost entirely self-taught. For me, that is the part of this that's personal. Every device that's voice enabled can be obtained really inexpensively, especially the Google Mini and the Echo Dot. And so doing that globally, where not everyone has the resources to buy, you know, a high-end product, whether that's a computer or a tablet, for me, it's personal. I really want to enable voice-based education and fun on a global basis at a low cost.
Yeah, education is definitely one of those slow movers that could use software such like what you guys are building, bring some innovation there. And then definitely the price point. I never really thought about it from that perspective, but it makes a lot of sense. So thanks for bringing those points up.
Yeah, absolutely.
What does the business model look like with this? And obviously your target customers seem to be children, if I'm reading it correctly, but what does the general business model look like? And then how would you define your target customer?
Yeah, absolutely. So initially, we have focused generally on K through five children. So that's generally in the age range of about 5 to 12. Although we've expanded that with some of our skills. And the other important point is it's for those children and their families. So we have five products. Bamboo Luminaries is our most recent product. That's really a game about history that the entire family can play. And feedback from customers has been awesome. They are playing it as families. You know, the adults and the teens and the kids are all playing it together and competing. And so that's been really fun. As I said earlier, you know, we definitely will continue to expand to much broader audiences. But we like the idea that kids can do some of our activities with family members. In terms of the business model, you know, it's really early for us. And so thus far, all of our skills and all of the features for all of our skills are enabled for free. We certainly will introduce, whether it's premium content or additional features in the future that will enable us to create a business model. Probably the most likely one in the foreseeable future will be premium content around Bamboo Books. Bamboo Books is a product that reads a story, essentially a paragraph at a time, and then checks for reading comprehension. So we tell the story of, for example, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, and it starts, you know, Dorothy lived in a log cabin on the plains in Kansas. And we go on for a few more sentences. We tell what's in Dorothy's house and things like that, you know, a wood stove and pots and pans and a table and chairs. And then we'll ask questions like, where did Dorothy live? And so we started with 15 books that are all free, but we anticipate, based on some of the discussions we've had with book publishers, that we should be able to introduce some paid books and create both a great listening and visual experience. I can come back to that in a bit. Yeah. But also, you know, so it's fun to just listen to the books. But also the ability to check listening comprehension. Are you really understanding the story? Are you great at understanding characters and maybe plot, but you miss some of the details? So we think that that's quite interesting. And certainly working with publishers, you know, they need to monetize their content. And we are a way for them to do that on this brand new platform. So that's one that, you know, I think you can imagine in the coming weeks and months. excuse me, longer term, we do have the ability to keep track of how our students are doing and enable that capability for parents. And again, today we've enabled that for free. So a parent can come in, whether it's in Bamboo Math or Bamboo Books or Bamboo Luminaries, and see exactly how their child is doing. They're great at, you know, addition and subtraction, but they struggle a little bit with math as it gets to the higher levels. The parent can literally see the problem that that their child made a mistake on, and potentially either help them correct it or send that information to a teacher. So we think as we add more and more analytical tools, and there's even a potential to enable some machine learning to provide kind of the next most challenging problem, whether that's math or reading comprehension, that we could turn on as part of a subscription service. So we always envision a large part of our product will be free, and then both a la carte for premium content and eventually for deeper analytics and perhaps better questions, if you will, there can also be a subscription model. So freemium, a la carte, subscription, that's the basic model.
Great. And you touched on your new product, the Bamboo Luminaries, and also books briefly, but I know that there's a total of five experiences in the portfolio Bamboo has created so far. So I'd like to sort of dig into each of these different products as little or as much as you would like, and really just learn more about each of these experiences and what you can kind of expect and anything else that's interesting with the product.
Absolutely. So that's correct. We have five products. Since I already talked about it a bit, I'll talk about Bamboo Math. Bamboo Math is essentially today kind of drill and practice math Alexa skill. And one of the things that we did, there's really two major differentiators with Bamboo Math. Number one, we didn't just limit it to number problems. We wanted to enable word problems. And what we've heard from many teachers, and Arena knows this because she's trained teachers, that kids understand number problems pretty well. But the minute you get it's actually the same calculation, but it's in the form of a word problem, some kids struggle. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, you know, we might ask, what is 10 minus 3? A lot of kids who handle subtraction pretty well can answer that. It's 7. And then you can ask the same question. There are 10 tarantulas bouncing on a trampoline. 3 fall off. How many are left? Mm-hmm. 7. I think I did a slightly different math problem, but anyway, you get the idea. And so we actually have enabled over 500,000 different types of math questions because of the different word problems. So that's one big differentiator, the word problems. The other is, I would say, closely related, which is that we take advantage of Amazon's Alexa presentation language. They call it APL. And it enables us to do really cool visuals on the screens, whether that's like an Echo Show product or actually Fire TV, particularly Fire TV Cube. It's pretty cool to see kids, you know, in their living room talking to the Fire TV Cube and seeing on, you know, a 40-inch television or a projected television, tarantulas falling off the trampoline, and their parents can walk in and see, wow, they're doing their math right there using Fire TV Cube. So, and it also works in the Fire tablets. You know, we haven't launched on Google, but they have the similar capabilities in some of their screen-based products as well as phones. And so we think that's a really interesting differentiator. And if we actually look at our user base, there's some evidence that the more we can do with visuals, the better that is in terms of both how many people are coming to the product, coming to use the product, and also how often they come back. So that's math. I also talked to you a little bit about the visuals, which applies to pretty much everything else. Bamboo Books, I mentioned it's initially these 15 public domain books. There are 3 levels. I should also add there are 5 different levels in math, and our approach is there should be multiple levels in every single one of our skills. But in books, there's 3 levels. There's some really basic stories like Little Red Riding Hood or Little Red Hen. Or Chicken Little at the most simple level. And we read the stories, particularly at level 1, maybe 2 or 3 sentences at a time. We pause and then we ask those reading comprehension questions. And of course, there are visuals that go along with the story. So you get to see the Little Red Hen or Little Red Riding Hood and the wolf. And then at level 2, the stories get a little more complicated. So we have Peter Rabbit, for example. It's a bit of a longer story. I think, let's see, I'm trying to remember which are at level 2 or 3. But anyway, then at level 3, I mentioned Wonderful Wizard of Oz or Treasure Island or Alice in Wonderland. And so these stories are longer, more complicated. I would say our level 3 stories work all the way up to kind of age 14 children or teens, actually, in that case. We do envision being able to ask more complex questions. For example, how do you, especially at level 3, You heard the story. Well, how does it make you feel when Alice shrinks or expands? Mm-hmm. You know, sort of personal questions. And those are interesting. The big differentiator for Bamboo Books and some of our other skills is we don't limit our answers to very simple one word or kind of multiple choice answers. So an example of that would be, I'll go back to Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. We ask, where does she live? And some people say Kansas, and we kind of expected that at first. And then we started testing with children, and they said, some of them would say, Dorothy lived in a log cabin on the plains in Kansas. And so, like, guess what? When we first tried it in beta before we'd release it to anybody, that would break our software. So we thought, all right, we have to be much, much smarter than this. And so we figured out actually some machine learning approaches to listening for a single word like Kansas, or two words like log cabin, or a phrase in a log cabin in Kansas. That's not a full sentence. Or that whole long, Dorothy lived in a log cabin on the plains in Kansas. And then we got answers like prairie instead of plains. And so we had to take into account synonyms as well. So we've developed a whole content management system that goes with our machine learning approach. And so our answer, our ability to take a broad range of answers, I would argue, is among the best in the entire voice application industry. And so much so that, you know, Amazon actually thought out of the box, their solution would work for some of the things that we were trying to do. And they, we convinced them that that actually, you know, you can't just take their slot-based approach and make everything work. It's not that simple. So that's a big innovation with books. We took that to Luminaries. So I'll talk a little bit about Bamboo Luminaries. That's our most recent skill. We were thinking a lot about history. So we've done math. We've done, you know, books, which is really reading or language arts. And then history. We thought a really interesting way, a really interesting approach to history was just think about famous people. And, or I should say historically important people. Some of them are famous. Jackie Robinson, Muhammad Ali. Some are not quite as famous, like Marie Curie. She's, you know, some people know who she is. She was an incredible, she won a Nobel Prize in both physics and chemistry, and was involved in some really interesting research in kind of nuclear investigation. We introduce a luminary of the day. So you learn something. You don't have to play a game, but you know, you can. And then we allow you to take a quiz based on all the details we provide you, and you earn points. So it really is a game. The other thing you can do in Bamboo Luminaries is to guess a luminary. So we'll give you three hints, and then you have to guess, is this, you know, Jackie Robinson or Rosa Parks or Marie Curie, or, you know, who is it? And every time you do a different activity, you learn points, and then we give you a player ranking. So that's the most gamified of all our products. I'll keep going if you want.
I know you got two more. If you want to touch on them quick, let's.
Sure. Yeah. So Bamboo Music was actually our first skill. It's the only one that doesn't today have visuals, but we're actually right now in the process of releasing a V2 in the coming months. That will introduce visuals. But Bamboo Music is really an introduction to music and music theory and how music works. And so we have three different levels. We actually have seven categories. So one category is how notes work. What's the difference between a high note and a low note? Are these notes going up or down? Are these notes going up or down by a half step or a full step? Other things like, can you recognize the difference between a piano, a violin, and a clarinet by name? That's another category. Things like tempo. Is it fast? which is called allegro in music. Irina also was a trained musician in the former Soviet Union, so she knows a lot about music. So allegro or adagio, which is fast or slow. Piano or forte, which is the dynamics, how strong the music is playing. It's quiet is piano, and forte is very strong. It's a little more complicated than that, but and we do this at multiple levels. And again, we'll play a piece. It might be at an early level one. It might be like from a nursery rhyme, but at level three, it's often classical music or folk music, and we'll ask you about that piece. You know, was that adagio or allegro or moderato, which is in between. We don't get you that or ask you that at level one. So that's music. And then the fifth one is actually a co-branded product with Highlights called Highlights Storybooks from Bamboo. And that's with the magazine publisher Highlights. And in many ways, it's similar to Bamboo Books, generally for younger kids. There are a few different exercises, not just kind of question and answer. There's fill in the blank or true false. We do some open-ended questions. And that's both in contrast to Bamboo Books, which today is only fiction. Highlight Storybooks from Bamboo is both fiction and nonfiction. So we think that's also pretty interesting. So those are our four skills. We've been very busy in the last year and a half. We'll keep developing more. We'll keep improving them. I think you'll see some of the gamification that we brought to Bamboo Luminaries being introduced to the other four skills. So we're having fun.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's super interesting. I know they're targeted towards up to teenagers, but some of that sounds like things I would like to play around with. So it's super cool to see all these different products you guys have been able to put out in a relatively short amount of time. But I'd love to dig into really any of the use cases or more customer success stories that you might have that can really paint the picture of how these interactive audio and with APL visual educational content is really better than the alternative or traditional way of, I guess, learning.
Yeah. I mean, to this point, what I can say is we really have anecdotes, and there's some interesting anecdotes that I can talk about. To do this right, eventually we'll need to conduct a study and compare both a test and control group and see, you know, if you're learning with audio and visuals, does that help you retain math better than if you're just kind of doing a workbook? Or if you are doing listening comprehension to stories and you see visuals, you know, does the combined approach help you understand and comprehend books better than, let's say, sort of not being quizzed on it and just going to class and maybe you'll get called on. So, but the anecdotes are really interesting. So one that was really surprising, but kind of with hindsight, maybe isn't quite as surprising. We, as I mentioned, we do these focus groups of different users, children and teens. And we did one with Bamboo Books. And we happen to have a family where both children were dyslexic, or, you know, I should say are dyslexic. And the mom had told us she was nervous about her children doing the Bamboo Books activity because the teachers had always said that both of her children were behind on grade level because of the dyslexia. And so she said, you know, don't expect too much. So interestingly, the way we do tests is we both have each child individually try it. And then sometimes we'll combine, you know, we'll have two, usually not more than two kids doing it together. But anyway, Irina, who, as I mentioned, is trained in education. She has a master's degree in it and has trained teachers of all ages. Or teachers who teach all ages, watch really carefully. And it turns out both of the kids who were dyslexic actually did quite a bit better on Bamboo Books than the other kids at the same age. And so I think one of the children was around 8 and the other, I think, was 11. And we had several 8-year-olds and, you know, 9, 10, 11. And what we noticed is, I think the children actually did better. And it kind of didn't matter whether it was audio only, because we did both. We tried, you know, just Echo devices, and then we tried Echo Show and Fire TV devices. I don't think it really mattered whether the visuals were present or not. And our hypothesis, with really only anecdotal data, is that because they're dyslexic, their concentration for audio is tuned up a bit. So they are listening actually more carefully, because they're just, their brains are compensating for the fact that it's hard for them to see letters in the right order, or even, you know, facing the right direction. That's sort of classic dyslexia. And so it's pure conjecture, but based on only these two kids. But, you know, that's really interesting. That's a really interesting scenario. And, you know, should we go do a big test for that and potentially other learning disabilities? Yeah, but, you know, we also think, and just based on some of our own education, that if you are stretched both with audio and with, you know, visual and other kind of approaches to education, that's going to be better than if you're having only one. And too often kind of we're tested with visual only. It's a workbook, it's homework, it's stuff like you're visually looking at and writing down the answer, or filling in the answer if you're doing it on a PC. So we think being able to say it is just another, it introduces a second sense, both, you know, sight and hearing to your learning. And yes, when you're in a lecture, you're hearing the whole time, but no, you're very rarely are you tested with audio. And another kind of personal note on this, which is perhaps why I was kind of excited about Alexa. I happen to go to a independent school. Whoops.
Someone else wants to join the interview, it sounds like.
Yeah. I should have turned off one of the 7 Alexas I have in my home office. But anyway, when I was in 6th through 12th grade, I went to an independent school that had a pretty innovative math department. And among the things that they did at every grade was there were certain exercises where you'd all kind of learn the lesson and you'd do homework and you'd practice and all that stuff. But not every single unit, but I would say like every 2 to 3 weeks, every student had to pass kind of a mini quiz by standing up in front of the class, and the teacher would ask them questions verbally, and they had to do the math in their head, and then they had to say what the answer was. And it wasn't just one, you had to do like 10 in a minute or whatever the problem was. We had one that was super interesting. We were doing the Pythagorean theorem in Chicago, where I grew up. And it turns out like every 8 blocks is a mile in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so the exercise was the teacher would come up with 2 intersections, and the teacher would say, and I'll tell you his name. His name was Barr McCutcheon, kind of this well-known teacher there, long since retired. But he would say, how far is it from Cottage Grove and Roosevelt to Narragansett and Lawrence? And so it's just like words. But those words represented exact mile distances north and south and east and west. So you had to do the math in your head. So you would figure out how far it was east to west. You'd have to square that. Then you would then square the north-south distance. You'd then have to add them together, if I'm doing this right, take the square root of the hypotenuse, and you had to say the square root of, you know, let's say the answer was 127. And then they would ask, well, about how far is that as the crow flies? So that's, you know, but a little more than 11. So that was all in your head, all done verbally.
Wow.
And so it proved to me, and believe me, it got you very good at understanding and remembering the Pythagorean theorem. It also helped you navigate Chicago streets, which I could still do really well, but that was just a side benefit. Anyway, the point is, having to do that in your head with audio proved to me long ago that it was better than just having to do the Pythagorean theorem in a workbook or, you know, today on a computer. So I think that's a historical example, but as soon as we start doing some of these tests, kind of controlled studies using the scientific method, we'll be able to show, you know, either that actually works or maybe it doesn't. And if not, why not? Let's see. Those are a couple anecdotes. I'm sure I could come up with some others. But you know, mostly what we hear from customers is they're just having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. That last part, to touch on your other two points, I don't know how I would do in front of a classroom like that. That sounds a little intense, but I can see how it would definitely condition you to learn. And then I didn't really think about it initially from the perspective of learning disabilities. That's super compelling. But from the last point, the fun part, I think just the ability to find that intersection of where all these kids' attention is at anyways, and then actually be able to create something that's fun and educational at the same time, it just seems like a home run. So that's super cool. Makes a lot of sense. But to get into sort of the next part of this interview, as I mentioned in the beginning, the most recent investment round that you guys raised, the $1.4 million, I'd love to just talk about that a little bit more, maybe give some background on that actual round and then what your plans are going forward, maybe the next 6 months or year or so, given that most recent round of funding.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like any startup, we felt like we had room to grow, mainly adding to our product team, both product and content, and then a little bit on the marketing side as well. So we started thinking about raising outside money. Actually, it was technically our second round of funding. The Amazon Alexa Fund reached out to us in the fall of, I guess it was technically they started talking to us late summer of 2018. So they made a small investment about a year before we raised the seed round. They loved what we were doing. At that point, we'd only launched Bamboo Music, but it was pretty unique. And I think it's still a unique product. So anyway, about a year later, we thought, okay, well, we can expand. We definitely should be able to hire some engineers. We're talking to some really interesting content partners. And, you know, as they start bringing in content to us, you know, our tiny team can't do it all. So we decided mainly to expand the team and then get some additional marketing support. And so we went out talking to both some angel investors and some venture capitalists. Some of them tended to be pretty focused on the voice world, if you will. Definitely some of our angels have invested in one or in some cases, maybe two other voice based kind of voice companies. So Voice Punch definitely is one of the VCs that's involved in targeting voice-based companies, startups in the voice space. Unlock Venture Partners is an up-and-coming fund in the Seattle area. Voice Punch is in LA, just as an aside. You guys probably, I know Colin knows that, but listeners, you know, for what that's worth. And so Unlock was started a couple of years ago by a serial entrepreneur, Andy Liu, and he has partners, I think, also in LA and I want to say the Bay Area. And they've been, you know, both Voice Punch and Unlock have been super helpful. Another one is called Wavemaker, and Wavemaker is also both LA and Singapore, and they do a fair amount of investments that expand to Asia or are based in Asia. Which we think is super interesting for our products and services. And then we've got a group called the Keeler Family Fund up here in Seattle. That's a family office, and they've been pretty interested in family-focused types of companies, and we're certainly that. And then we have a few angels with really strong backgrounds, a few Amazon veterans, folks who've worked at Apple, Microsoft, and Disney. So they bring, I think, really interesting backgrounds to us and can help advise us both on kind of business model, how to expand. International is another interesting one. And so so you asked about, you know, what we're planning. You know, I think it's perhaps many years at Amazon. I'm not going to tell you tons of in extreme detail, because, you know, we want to kind of surprise the world with what we're doing. But, you know, on some things that we've talked about pretty publicly before, we're certainly going to add more skills. And so those might be kind of doubling down in language arts. You know, we're doing reading comprehension now, but there are many other areas of language arts. We don't yet today have one in the science area. So I think you could reasonably presume that we would do that. And so I think the way to think about what we're doing in terms of the range of skills is we want to cover both skills that students, that really augment what students are learning in school, and also some things that they might not be learning in school. So music, that's kind of a, some schools yes, some schools no. So that's an interesting one that we've already done, but we can do some more there. And then, you know, there may be some that are a little more activity-based, like what do kids like to do in this age range after school? And can we do some things that supplement that? And so it might not be quite as academic, a little more perhaps activity-based. And then, you know, we get asked all the time about, well, what about other platforms? And, you know, I think I'm not here going to announce anything on the podcast. Maybe I'll come back and do that someday. But, you know, in the US, Alexa certainly has a lead. Everyone knows that Google is second in the US. They are certainly a very strong platform. They bring some things to the table that Amazon doesn't. So that's certainly interesting. Globally, we've seen the increase, certainly in China, of Baidu, Alibaba, Xiaomi, and some others. And I think the most recent report, I think it was from VoiceBot, suggested that Google was, if you look at global market share, Google's actually fallen to third place, I think, behind Baidu. Mm-hmm. That said, like, for a startup to go do something this soon in China is super challenging. Mm-hmm. And so one thing I learned working with many startups over my career, you have to focus. And so, you know, in the immediate future, are we going to go launch something like 3 weeks from now in China? I can definitely say no. But, you know, it's by design that Wavemaker is one of our investors, and they've done quite a bit in Asia. We have some other angels who has some ties to Asia. So, you know, in the fullness of time, we may do some things pretty broadly outside the US. As it is, actually, three of our skills are actually launched, admittedly English only, but they're in 80 countries already. So we have customers in India, the UK, Australia, other parts of Europe, New Zealand, you know, Pakistan, all over. So so I think that's another thing you'll see us continue to expand. We'll be a bit cautious about other languages, kind of for the same reason. We're not going to go do something in China in 3 weeks. And then the other area is just content partners. We announced Highlights. We have some other signed partnerships, which we haven't announced. And then many others in the works. So over the coming year. I think you'll see mainly in the area of premium content, some things that could be quite interesting.
To wrap up the show, I like to ask everyone that comes on, what really gets you most excited about this audio and voice space going into the next few years ahead?
Yeah, well, in some ways, it goes back to one of the key reasons that that I started the company, and that is that I do really think of voice as a brand new computing platform, and it's no one company either. There, you know, are multiple platforms, and so I think what we've learned is that that voice is a really important part of any application, but it's not the only thing. It's kind of like the touchscreen is a really, really important feature on phones. In fact, at this point, you can't have a phone or an application that doesn't have a touchscreen. Like, no one's using really feature phone. No one's doing anything interesting from an application standpoint on feature phones. You know, what if suddenly your phone had its touchscreen disabled? Like, that would be a huge problem. And so I think we're going to see that with voice, that it will be a critical feature for any computing device, whether that's a dedicated smart speaker with audio only, which I think will always have a really important role to play, or maybe will fade into the background and, you know, every light bulb, every outlet, every single thing in your home and your office and your car will kind of have a built-in speaker, if you will. But I also think that screens are really important. And part of it is humans just remember visuals really well. It's really cool, as I mentioned, to see kids interacting with Fire TV Cube, where you don't have to use the microphone. It just listens just like any other smart speaker. But then we can present visuals on the screen. So interacting, using your voice as the primary method of interacting, but we're presenting more and more information to you, either in the form of just knowledge or supplementing a story we're reading to you or quizzes. I think that's super interesting. And I also, you know, I think we should think about this broadly. I have the Echo Buds for my essentially phone, earbuds and obviously microphone. And so imagine, and this is, by the way, the technology is totally there to do this now. Imagine I've got my earbuds in, I'm taking the train, and I show up in the station, and, you know, I want to know if my train is late, and I want to know if it's going to arrive at its destination on time, and what's the weather at my destination. And I don't, you know, I could use my phone, but there's nothing to prevent a screen in the station as I go up to it from serving as my sort of, at that instance, my session-based screen for my voice experience. So I just go up to the screen, I've got my Echo Buds in, or, you know, Google will have some soon if they don't already. And I just say, is my train on time? And the screen will show, oh yeah, you know, it's on time. It's due to arrive in 15 minutes. You know, it'll show you visually where it is. It'll show you that, oh yeah, there's a snowstorm an hour away on the toward the destination. And so you might arrive 15 minutes late. It might show you, you know, that you have to change trains and show you visually how to do that. Similarly in an airport, or, you know, you show up at work and the same thing could happen. You know, where do I need to be today? There could be a screen in your office and it says, you know, your next meeting is over there. So I just think voice will be critical to everything we do, but we shouldn't assume that, you know, a smart speaker is the only way that voice will be envisioned going forward. I think you'll see more and more kind of, I don't love the word multimodal, but that's sort of the current term. The reason I don't love it is it's like, multimedia is a much older, it's just multimedia that happens to be voice driven. So yeah, I'll call it multimodal, but I think multimodal and not even in the current form where it's like necessarily a dedicated device. You might detach the voice from the screen, which is kind of my Echo Bud scenario that I was talking about. So I think that's going to happen. And essentially every device, like we have stories, you know, 5 years ago, people would tell funny stories about kids seeing a big screen TV and they'd go up and try to touch it. And they're like, why is this TV broken? It doesn't, like the touchscreen doesn't work. And now we've got kids going to the toaster and saying, make my toast golden brown. And the, you know, the toaster doesn't say, okay, I'm, you know, I'll do that. But, and they're like, some are starting to, especially the little kids, you know, 4 or 5 years old, they're like, what's wrong with this toaster? So that will definitely happen. And that's another anecdote I should just mention. Because we're working with young kids, we started to realize many of them, for many of them, voice is their first interaction with a computing device. And why is that? Usually it's because parents have given them their iPhone and they're saying, hey, Siri. And what you have to remember is you can talk way before you can read. Or, and also, by the way, you can listen, or at least you can attempt to listen much younger than you can read or use a touchscreen, or, you know, even understand what's on a screen. So we're finding that, you know, 4 and 5 year olds are actually much more accepting and kind of willing to push a voice interface than, let's say, a 13 year old. And it's just because that's the way they started interacting with computers. So I think that's what it means to me about the future is we are going to have kids over the next 5 to 10 years who they'll want to interact with their voice for everything. Mm-hmm. You know, that I should not everything, but just a lot more than we do today. I shouldn't say voice is going to take over everything in every application, because some applications are bad for voice. Mm-hmm. But the ones that can be done with voice that are not being done today, you know, in 10 years, the teenagers will expect everything to respond to their voice that should respond to their voice.
Yeah, that's a great outlook. It'd be super interesting to see how this sort of evolution plays out. But yeah, super, super interesting, and excited to buckle in and see where it takes us. I would love to know, as I'm sure the other guests would, or the other listeners of the show, where the best place just to follow what you guys are up to, follow you, maybe use some of these different experiences that we've talked about. Really, where's just the best place for the listeners to show you some love?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, the simplest is to just go to our website, www.bambolearning.com. That's, you know, we show off all of our 5 skills there. You can certainly search for us at Amazon in the Alexa skills store. If you just search for Bamboo Learning, I think all 5 of our skills will show up. And we do also have a Twitter, and it's at Learn with Bamboo, all one word, at Learn with Bamboo. And so that's our Twitter. And then we all, you know, we have both a company LinkedIn, and we tend to post like new announcements on that. But we're always posting something on Twitter. But I would say, you know, website, probably Twitter are the two biggest ones.
Great. Awesome. Well, Ian, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing everything you had. It was super interesting. I'm sure the listeners will agree with that.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks so much, Colin. I had a lot of fun talking with you.
This podcast is sponsored by VoicePunch VC. VoicePunch is a venture capital fund that is focused on voice-driven and voice-connected technology. So if you are a company or an entrepreneur that has a product that is in this sort of space, much like a lot of the different companies that I am interviewing, then you should reach out to the team by going to voicepunch.vc.